Good evening. It's good to be back with y'all. I see so many familiar faces here tonight. And I do want to reiterate something that I said about 4 or 5 years ago. I think it's absolutely true that anything that I am today or that I've learned in my life, this congregation has to do with it. And the people here are the ones that taught me about God, taught me how to serve Him, and taught me what it means to be His disciple. And I will never forget that, and I greatly appreciate that. And I love this congregation greatly. And thank you for all of you in this audience, and Mr. Dawson, Miss Louise, Mr. Ray, Mr. Smith, all of y'all, Mr. Gallagher, that had an impact on my life. I greatly appreciate it. And y'all mean more to me than you'll ever know. So I do appreciate the opportunity to come back and speak to you tonight. I was very fortunate because of this congregation to be able to go on a mission trip to Costa Rica. And this was, as I was telling the elders earlier, my first foreign mission trip. And it was, you would think that I would have been on one before, but I always found excuses not to go, whether they be legitimate or otherwise. There's always a reason not to go. But for this mission trip, I told my good friend who's a preacher there at Eustis, Dr. Joe Roberts, I told him, I said, "Joe, I want to go with you to Costa Rica." Now, I've said that before, and I've always found a way to back out, so I don't want you to let me back out. So he always held me accountable and made it so that I would go with him. And I greatly appreciate that opportunity. When my dad was asking me what I wanted to do tonight, I told him I didn't want to just stand up here and give a slideshow about Costa Rica and then offer some obligatory invitation at the end of it. I want to talk about the lessons I learned from it, and hopefully it'll impact your life as well as it did mine. I like to read books, and I came across this concept in a book that I read I thought was really neat. It was very appropriate for what I'm going to talk about tonight. It's this concept of 2%. You think about 2%, it's not very much significant about 2%. What good is 2% of anything, really? I mean, you think about it, 2%, it's not a lot. It leaves 98% that's somewhere else that's not being used. Doesn't seem very productive. We might drink 2% milk. I know in our house we drink skim, so my father-in-law likes to say that's like drinking water. But some of you may drink 2%. And that's about the only thing I can think of when I thought about 2% and where 2% is useful, is drinking 2% milk. We would never be overly excited about a 2% raise at work. Now, some of you might be because of the economy the way it is now. You may not have had a raise in years. But a 2% raise, not really much to get excited about. That's less than inflation. It's not really something you're going to look forward to. A 2% discount, if you got that in the mail for a coupon to go somewhere, you're not going to go out of your way for a 2% coupon. It's just not very much. So what about 2% of our time? Still not a lot. If I said, well, I want to be the best father I can be, I'm going to commit myself to spending 2% of my time with my kids. You're not going to admire me very much for that commitment. It wasn't a very sacrificial type of commitment. But how can 2% change a life? It's an interesting question for such a small number. So think about this. 2% can only change life. It can change the world. That's a weird, when I first read that, I thought, 2% really change the world? But think about 2%. We talk about short-term missions, and then people talk about different aspects of short-term missions, good and bad. But basically, 2% of a calendar year is about 7.3 days. It's a short-term mission trip. 2% of one calendar year. And so for us to think about 2% of my time, 2% of my year being spent on a mission trip, most of us would say the impact of that is going to be minimum at best. At best. There are many criticisms, as I said, of short-term missions. There's, people say, well, it's basically a glorified vacation. You're going on a 7-day mission trip. You're basically going on vacation for a while. You'll have a little bit of fun. The kids enjoy it. They get out of the country and they come back and not much has changed. I'm going to tell you that 2%, a short-term mission, can have a huge impact. Not just a huge impact on the people that you're going to see, but the people that are going. And so this 2% can be very, very significant. So tonight I want to talk about Costa Rica being a significant 2%. Very significant. We all know what the Great Commission says. We know we've read it 1,000 times and at the end of Matthew. But Jesus says, therefore, go and make disciples of all nations, baptizing them in the name of the Father and of the Son and of the Holy Spirit, and teaching them to obey everything I have commanded you. And surely I am with you always to the very end of the age. We've read that 100 times, and we know it. We put it on the back of T-shirts. We have it as mission statements for various organizations. But it's hard to make disciples in 7 days, isn't it? If you're going to train up a child and teach them everything they need to know about God, you're going to have a hard time doing it in 1 week. It's not any different than training anybody else that you're trying to teach the gospel. It's nearby impossible to make a disciple in 7 days. But it is, however, easy to encourage, to help, and to contribute to a local ministry that's already actively doing that. It is easy to do that for 7 days. And so it's also very impactful for the people that are going to these places to serve God in a different context than what they serve Him in every single day. Because if you're like me, and I imagine that you are, once you get into your routine and you get around the familiar every single day, it's easy to lose sight of the opportunities that God has given you to serve Him or to teach others. It's easy to lose sight of the blessings that God has given you here and those blessings that you are commanded to use for Him. It's easy to lose sight of it because we're in that context every single day. And so we lose sight of all the ways that God has given us to serve Him. So it's very impactful to go to a different context, whether that be to a foreign country like Costa Rica, or whether that be to downtown in a major city with the inner city ministry. Whatever that is, to change your context, that makes an impact. And it creates a new paradigm in which we see the needs of the world. And we could talk about the needs of people in places like South America or in Africa, other places. And we can understand it, we can see pictures, but when you live it, doesn't that change your perspective? We just got done spending 8 days last week in Mount Dora. I went down there to see my best friend in the world who just lost his son. Now, I'm going to tell you, that changes your perspective on things. When you're sitting with people who are dealing with that loss, that changes your perspective because you're in it, because you're living it. You see it firsthand. Same is true with spreading the gospel. Same is true with using our blessings to bless other people. I like to use the phrase, blessed to be a blessing. I think it's a neat phrase. But I think we truly are blessed to be a blessing. And a lot of times we need to change our context in order to understand that. 2% can have a long-term impact on the other 98%. To me, that's the greatest thing about it. Have a huge impact on the other 98%. You have a huge impact in that foreign country that you went to. A lot of different ways it can have an impact. But one of which, it can spark an interest in the local church by the local people. You know, when they see all of a sudden in our situation, we had 65 people, mostly college students from the United States, going into a small rural town in Costa Rica. And when they see 65 Americans walking around, handing out tracts, knocking on their door, inviting them to come to a gospel meeting, doing a vacation Bible school in the public schools, doing all these things, that impacts them. It sparks an interest in the church. People want to know more about this organization that's able to do all these things. It creates opportunities to teach. Creates opportunities to teach because you're someone different they haven't ever seen before and doing something they may not have ever experienced. It can create a larger influence for that church in the community. The church that we were working with had about 20 to 25 members. So when we show up with 65 people, we tripled their size. So you think about that impact that it had on their church and the influence that church now has in that community because of the work that was done there. It can provide motivation and energy to the membership there and to the ministers and et cetera. I mean, you can imagine how worn out we get with what we do for God. Imagine being in their position. In a struggling church, a new church, in a new community, trying to reach the world. Having someone new come in with energy and enthusiasm can provide them with that same energy and enthusiasm. 2% can have a major impact on the other 98% of the time for the missionaries that come. It can give them a new view on the blessings that they enjoy. Like I said earlier, the context. You think about, we are very spoiled. Things like hot water and air conditioning and internet and all those things that we have that other people don't. We can gain a new appreciation for these blessings and how we can use them for God. It puts into context our responsibility to minister to all people, especially those around us. But that didn't negate the responsibility to all people. It impacts their heart to do something more at home. Whenever you go, and you can spend 7 days of uninterrupted time serving God, whether that be at a Bible camp. And we always say the Bible camp is one of the best places to help young people grow in their spirituality because it removes them from the context of their everyday life. But whether that be a Bible camp or whether that be a mission trip or whether that be some other form of seclusion with nothing but you and God, it can impact your heart to want to do more when you get back home. It encourages those who go, encourages them to know others around the world are working just as they are. Lets you know you're not alone. That's not just a struggle that we're going through here in America. There's other people in the world doing the same thing that we are. So where did I spend 2% of my year? I spent it here in Costa Rica. And I don't know if you can see that red arrow, but it's pointing to the tiny town of Buenos Aires in southern Costa Rica, right close to the border of Panama. I was telling the elders earlier, they call it the Devil's Valley, where Buenos Aires is located, because it's between two mountain ranges and they get no coastal breeze. So it's hot and humid. It's great for growing pineapple, apparently, but not for walking around when you're from America and used to air conditioning. It's hot, blazing hot. But 2% of my 2011 was spent here in this town. And I believe that was a significant 2%. This is the sign for the church building they have out front. I asked them why the menorah on the sign, nobody knew, but it must be a cultural thing. Maybe it symbolizes religion of some sort. But this sign, they mounted at the top of the roof of the house. They rent a house in town, and that serves as their church building. They can't afford to buy anything. The church there is only 2 years old. The preacher has been preaching for 20 years. He just recently moved into the area and began that congregation there. So they're a young congregation with an experienced minister. But they rent a little house, and they put this sign on top of the house to try to encourage people to come in. In addition to that sign, they created this sign, which they put up to serve as an advertisement for the gospel meeting. When we were there in Costa Rica, we had several things that we were going to do, one of which there was a gospel meeting they were holding. And so they wanted to encourage as many of the community to come to the gospel meeting as they could. Daniel Chavez, in this picture, is the local preacher. Daniel's a great guy. He's a hard worker. He would get out into his car every day with his bullhorn and travel around town and yell out the window with the bullhorn to invite people to the gospel meeting. I couldn't understand a word he was saying, but I'm sure it was very impactful. My Spanish is not very good. But Daniel's a great guy. Daniel has three daughters, two of which are married, and they're both married to preachers in Costa Rica. His third daughter is 21. She's dating a young man right now who wants to go to Panama to train to be a preacher. This guy has a great family. His wife was a good servant as well. But Daniel and the other people there at the congregation are working hard to make that rental house have a significant impact on that community. This is a little house down the road from the church building that they rented while we were there. You can't really see how big this house is in this picture. But essentially you had a carport right here, and there was a kitchen behind it, and there was two bedrooms and one bathroom. Well, part of the mission trip was we had a preacher training. And we invited preachers from all over the area that wanted to come. Dr. Joe Roberts conducted the training, and I helped him facilitate that. And all the preachers that came, about 12 of them, as I can best remember, came from out of town. They stayed in that little house. 12 preachers, and many of them brought their wives, in a two-bedroom, one-bath house, down the road from the church building. That's also the house in which we ate every meal while we were there in Costa Rica. They fixed it for us in the kitchen, and we'd go sit outside and eat. I'd always stand up and eat. So is it because it was usually raining? So we'd stand up and eat out in the yard. But every day when you walked in there, you'd see their laundry hanging on the window, or you'd see their little mats that they had brought with them, their sleeping bags they brought with them. But those preachers were hungry for the word. Most of them traveled from the country of Panama to come up to Costa Rica to learn from Joe and go through that preacher training. They thought that 2% was significant. They were so significant they were able to wanting to travel hundreds of miles, stay in a two-bedroom, one-bath house, just to learn about how to be a better minister in their community. It was a significant 2%. This is the church building. This is the house in which they are renting, that they have made their church home. Down here on the bottom, you'll see an older gentleman named Ben Wright. He's the one who started the idea of having a mission trip to Costa Rica. But we painted the outside of this building. I don't know why they chose this tropical color, but apparently it works in the community. And we painted that house inside and out. And just to help them try to attract people to the church. Try to help them get more people from the community into the benches, into the pews. This is Daniel baptizing a young lady, and I do not remember her name. But it's interesting, this pool that they're baptizing her in, Torch Missions bought that pool because they didn't have a baptistry. They were having to use a hotel pool, which was a long way away. They were having to go down most of the time to the river or trying to find some body of water to do baptisms. And so we bought them a pool, this little 4-foot pool from, I don't know where they got it, but they bought it for them. And that lady and that man are married, and they were both baptized the same day. We got to witness their wedding, and after the wedding was over, we baptized them. And it was an interesting thing. You'll notice he's holding her feet down. That's something they did. We had 4 baptisms while we were there, and they did that for every one of them. Had to hold their feet down while they sat in the water, baptize them. This was part of the preacher training. Joe Roberts is the man on the right, on the left, excuse me, who is was the preacher at Eustis. He's now in Tennessee. But standing next to him, leaning against the podium, is the real all-stars of the mission trip. It's one of their interpreters. His name is Diego Rojas. Diego was a student at Freed Hardeman, a Bible major. And he got his degree from Freed Hardeman and graduated with it. But instead of staying in the States, where he could have made a lot more money, he decided to go back to Costa Rica, where he's from. His father is a preacher in San Jose. And so Diego, after he received his degree, went back to Costa Rica to help his father at that congregation. Now Diego is becoming a fine preacher himself. And one day I'm sure he will venture out when he's able to get support and hopefully be able to start another congregation in another city. But Diego did an excellent job of interpreting while we were there. He had a huge impact on that 2% of time that we had. Without him, without Diego, without Minor, without the other interpreters that we had, we couldn't have done anything. But you will notice Diego, and this is something I had never experienced before. Diego is leaning on that podium just like Joe is. It was so funny because every night after the gospel meeting was over, we'd have an American devotional. Well, most of the Costa Ricans would stay for the devotional as well. And so when I was speaking, it was my turn to speak at night. I had never done that with an interpreter. It makes it very interesting. It makes it very slow. But also, everything that we did, I'm always animated with my hands, talk with my hands. They did it too. So it was funny. The interpreters would always do the same. They would mimic the movements of whoever was speaking at the time. And Diego was great at this. He did a wonderful job. Diego was one of my roommates in the place that we stayed, and he's a wonderful young man. But he did an excellent job. But there was a significant time spent here teaching about God and from the American perspective, learning about how we could impact lives at home. This is in that two-bedroom, one-bath house I was telling you about. The ladies of the congregation would prepare the food in the kitchen back here. And this is Daniel's wife, the preacher's wife. And you'll notice she's got a big bowl of rice and beans. Every single meal, breakfast, lunch, and supper, had rice of some kind. I told Monica when I got back, I never wanted to eat rice again. It was very good while we were there, and I was very thankful for it. I thank God for it every day. But it's a lot of rice. These ladies were cooking for 65 Americans, 12 preachers from foreign countries, plus their wives, and all the membership of the congregation that was there. That was a significant work they were doing. But they did it all so that we could spread the gospel. They did all that work so we would minimize our time having to travel to eat. They did that so we could always congregate together, Americans and Costa Ricans, the preachers and Joe Roberts and Terry Reeves and everybody else who was there. They did it so we would be more effective in what we were doing. They had a significant impact on this trip. During the day, many things were done. As I said, we had 65 people, so there were a lot of groups doing a lot of things. One of the things that they did, they divided the area. They don't call them counties, but this is similar to our counties. They divided it into four sections, and each day they would go to a different section and knock on every door in that section of town. This was the type of paths they had to walk down to reach every house. The houses obviously aren't on streets all the time. You'll notice the large gentleman right there in the maroon shirt. His name was Little Joe. And Little Joe was scared to walk across that bridge, but he knew he had to if he was going to spread the gospel, so Little Joe did. The gentleman in the backpack that's walking across it in the picture, his name is Jacob O'Neill, and he's from Eustis. He's from our congregation in Eustis. And they would go knock, as I said, on every single door in that town to make sure that everyone had an opportunity to come to that gospel meeting, that everyone there knew that the congregation of the Lord existed in that town. So they did a significant work. They did a significant work. We were very, very fortunate. As opposed to those of you who may have been to Honduras or other countries, we actually got to stay in a hotel. Pretty amazing. So one hotel in town, it was this one. And they gave them a great deal on the rooms. And so we didn't have to stay in a house or in a hut somewhere, and we could stay locally. But this hotel actually had air conditioning in the rooms. So at night, we cranked ours down to about 60. To try to make up for the 95 and hundreds we were dealing with during the day. And we slept rather comfortably. Actually, I slept cold, to be honest with you. But we were very fortunate to have that. Now, I was telling the elders earlier that the first night we were there, on the plane ride, they were telling us, we got a hotel, it's got hot water, it's got air conditioning. And everybody was so excited because everybody that goes to Honduras has never had that before. They've never had air conditioning or hot water. And so we got to the hotel, and the first morning we got up to take showers, there was no hot water. And everyone was very disappointed. We dealt with it. We were just disappointed. And so one of the interpreters went and asked the hotel management. There was no hot water. Y'all said, y'all have hot water. They said, oh yeah, we do have hot water, but y'all didn't negotiate that in the price. So if you want hot water, you got to pay more. And so we had to pay them like an extra $75 so they would turn on the hot water. But we got to enjoy hot water. It was very nice, and we definitely enjoyed that. But while we were staying in the hotel, most of the people we're ministering to were staying in these type houses. This is the typical house that you would see. These are the types of doors that we were knocking on. These are the people we were trying to get the gospel to. And so again, we would go and we would knock doors. We would go to every house in the community, every house in the town, in the county, inviting them to this gospel meeting, inviting them to church. This is where we held the gospel meeting. This is the wedding actually taking place in this picture. It's an interesting wedding. Well, because it was Costa Rica, but also because the couple got baptized after the wedding was over. So they started a new life together as a married couple, and also started a new life together in Christ. It's a pretty significant event. And so Diego was interpreting the wedding for us Americans who were there. So Daniel was performing the wedding. It was a very long wedding, by the way. As Daniel was preaching the wedding, Diego was interpreting him. For him as well. The women in the congregation were amazing. They took the decorations for this wedding. They basically took things that were around the church building. They took a bamboo stalk, wild flowers, and made an arrangement and decorated the wedding. And the reason why they did that is they wanted this woman who was being baptized, who was getting married, to understand that they loved her, that they cared about her, They cared about her enough to do all this work for her wedding ceremony. And they showed the love of God by doing that. This is the street in which the church building sits. It gets pretty significant traffic, but we walked up and down that street every day, knocking on doors and going between the house that had the food and back to the church building. This is where they worship. The house is only a two-bedroom house, so there's no way you could worship in the house. So they built basically a lean-to out of bamboo and other wood that they found around the property. Of course, they had to buy the metal roofing for it. But it was a very interesting building, an interesting structure. I found it interesting that they used bamboo as conduit. I'd never seen that before. But all the wiring for the two light bulbs they had ran through bamboo stalks. But they built all these benches themselves. They had the flooring was pea gravel with dirt. It was very neat. They had a very good setup to invite people in. It's another baptism. This older gentleman was in our counseling sessions, and he decided he wanted to be baptized. So in the middle of the day, there's not a large crowd around this because there was only those of us that were on the carpentry crew, the counselor, and then one of the preachers from Panama who were there. And we baptized this gentleman as one of the four baptisms while we were there. This is most of our group from America, with Diego sitting on the front row as well. There's me and Joe Roberts and several others, as I said, from Freed Hardman and other places. As I said, Joe did the preacher training every day, and this is one of the days. And these preachers, it was amazing to me, they'd all sit on the front row, they were all taking notes when Diego was interpreting or Minor was interpreting. And these guys were really into this discussion. They asked some very good questions. They asked questions like, how do we reach people that are right now in the Catholic Church? How can we reach them and teach them the truth? There were some good questions, and those were things that they were struggling with. And Joe was able to give them some very good answers for that. But here is Dr. Joe Roberts, who has his PhD. And he's traveling down to Costa Rica to spend 2% of his year teaching Panamanian preachers who can't understand a word he's saying. Who was helping me build, I was helping him, really, build cabinets in 100-degree weather. He thought it was important, and he made a huge impact there. This is a picture of me and Terry Reeves. He's the president of Torch Missions. Terry, if you know him, he's a great fella. He's been in Christian education his whole career, was a Christian school teacher, and got laid off from his school when they had to drop in enrollment because he was the last one hired. So now he's a dorm parent at Freed Hardman, and he loves his job, and he's a cancer survivor. And he's having to go continually through cancer treatments and through doctor's appointments. But he still goes every year down to South America. That's what he lives for. Terry spent 33 days in South America this summer, teaching and preaching and doing whatever he could. He's a good fella. They say we look alike. I don't know. But they kept calling me Terry Jr. And so that was my nickname on the trip. I don't look like that now, but I did then. This is when I was able to give the talk, and Minor Perez was my interpreter. Minor's another one that went to Freed Hardman as a Bible major. He's there right now, majoring in Bible and hoping to one day become a preacher just like his father. His father preaches at a congregation in Panama, and he is a student at Freed Hardman learning how to be a preacher and wants to move back to Panama and become a missionary preacher as well. These are the roommates we had. On the left is Dr. Wayne Scott. He's a vice president at Freed Hardman. Now, he's wearing an ugly t-shirt, but I still let him room with me. The last night there, he was leaving, he put his Alabama t-shirt and Alabama pajama pants in my bed under the covers so that when I pulled the covers back, there it was. I had to take a picture of that, and then I immediately threw it on him. I threatened to throw it in the toilet, but I didn't. But Wayne's a great guy. Here's a vice president of Freed Hardman University, taking 2% of his time to go down to Costa Rica. He even brought his daughter with him. And they spent a week there teaching and preaching in the hot sun. Wayne, there's a lot of pictures I have of him painting that building. Hard worker. Has a very important job. Probably some people would think it was too important to leave for a week and go to a foreign country, but he did it. And this is the volcano which we visited on our last day in Costa Rica. It's an interesting volcano because it constantly has smoke coming up, but it hasn't had a full-blown eruption in a long time. But to me, this volcano is very significant. That last picture of that volcano could be a picture of our Christian lives. That could be a picture of who we are as God's disciples. We may look the part. We might blow smoke, but we may just be dormant. So we need to look at our lives and say, am I doing something significant for God in my 2% that God blesses me with every week? What am I doing to serve God? That volcano was beautiful. It was nice to look at. We went up on it and went to the resorts around it. It's a great thing to look at. It really didn't do much. Am I using each day as a gift from God and finding opportunities God's given me that day to serve Him? We don't have to go to Honduras or Costa Rica or anywhere to serve God. We can serve God right here, but are we doing it? I hope that we're not that volcano. I hope that we are on fire for God. I hope that we are looking for ways to serve Him each and every day. And that the Lord's blessed us with another 2% today. This week we get another 7 days to serve Him. What are we going to do with it? What are we going to do with that 2% that God has given us? Paul said it like this: for me to live is Christ, and to die is gain. What great words. But are we living for Christ every single day? Are we living for Christ in Mobile, Alabama? Or in my case, Foley, Alabama? Or in Eustace, Florida? Or in Pennsylvania? Or Freed Hardeman University? Am I living for Christ every single day? Regardless of what that day brings. 100% of the time, we need to be serving God. We don't need to reserve 2% for Him. That 2% can be significant. And I would encourage you to find a way to spend 2% out of the context in which you're in so that can impact the other 98. But 100% of the time, we need to be serving God. So what are we doing with that 100%? You may not spend it in a foreign field, but you can spend it serving Him. Are you seeking opportunities to spread His word? Are you looking for those blessings that God has given us in this country, the freedoms that we enjoy? Are we using those times to serve Him and to spread His word? And has the Great Commission become your personal mission? Tonight, I want to encourage you to make that Great Commission your personal mission. I want to encourage you to spend 100% of your time serving Him. I want to encourage you to let you know there's other people in the world that are doing the same thing. That God has blessed us with so many things and so many ways to serve Him right here where we are. So tonight, if you're here and you have found that you have been a blessing of those that have served God and taught His gospel, and tonight you would like to come and be baptized and obey that gospel. Or if you're here tonight and you've already obeyed the gospel, but you've lost sight of what it means to serve Him. If you've allowed the other things in the world to distract you from the significant opportunities that God gives you each and every day, would you come now as together we stand and sing?